I'm back this week for part two of AMA Ask Me Anything. I'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions.
This is Nero Feliciano, and welcome to the All Things Life podcast. I'm a wife, a mom of four, and a cognitive psychotherapist. And I'm really excited to share these conversations and interviews with you that will hopefully help you live a healthier, fuller, and more peaceful life.
Well, hello, everyone. I am back this week to answer the rest of the questions that I got from last week. And this week, there's some really great questions that I think are going to be helpful to many people. I hope all of you are doing well. It's a little bit of a, feels like a transition time in Connecticut. I know our numbers are going up. We've had different groups of schools quarantine, games now canceled because of COVID exposure. So it almost feels like the season's changing a little bit, which can certainly elevate anxiety. And I was watching the news tonight that just talked about the statistics of people who are feeling anxious. It is unbelievable. Mental health practitioners are saying this is something we've never seen ever. The increases are in the hundreds of percent increase, 300%, 400% of different age populations experiencing anxiety. So if that's you right now, you are not alone. There's so many people who are going through this. And hopefully some of the questions that we talk about today are going to help with some of the anxieties you may be feeling right at this moment. But the one thing I'm going to tell you just from the get-go is get help or talk to someone sooner than later. Early intervention when it comes to your own anxiety, your anxiety for your kids' anxiety. As soon as you start to notice that things are not the way that they normally are, that you're not feeling your normal. And now who really knows what normal really is because we've been operating in this state for so long. But I think you know the difference between, okay, I'm worried and I'm anxious versus I really am having trouble just moving through the daily tasks of my life. I'm really having trouble thinking about anything but these worst case scenarios. Please, please talk to someone. I can't even tell you how treatable anxiety is, but the key to any of these things, anxiety, depression, is early intervention. So I'm sorry to get us started on such a sobering thought, but really it is becoming more and more of a mental health crisis, and we want to do something about it. We don't want it to continue this way. And the good news, and yes, there is good news, is that there are things we can do about it. And we're going to start off with questions that are going to give us more information about this. So the first question I received was, how do we have difficult conversations with family members about holidays? Here come the holiday questions again, because it really is on everyone's mind. What are we going to do about holidays? This is going to be different. And this question actually came up at a small gathering I attended this past weekend for my dear brother-in-law's birthday. It was outside and we were keeping distance and small group of people. And we did have food, but it was very safely done. Even some people kind of brought a dish and portioned it out into family members. So each family had a dish with their name labeled on it. So there wasn't so much cross-sharing of food. So there are different ways to go about this, but this was the topic of our conversation. How do we have these awkward conversations with people? Because it gets awkward. You know, you're invited to a gathering or party and different people have different comfort levels and the questions start popping up in your mind. Okay, how many people are going to be there? Are they being safe? What is their comfort level? Because, you know, if they're totally comfortable, they've been comfortable in different situations, which might make you uncomfortable. So we have to actually have these conversations. And depending on your level of comfort with what people view as confrontation, because it can get confrontational, you either have them or you don't. I think when it comes to the holidays, it's really hard not to have these questions, especially with family members who have different comfort levels. And I think that's what it comes down to. What are you comfortable with? You have to ask that question of yourself, because if you're not comfortable and you agree to a situation, you're going to be very uncomfortable, awkward, maybe even resentful, maybe even angry, and that is going to come out in different ways. And also, you're doing your best at this point to keep people safe. As I mentioned before, our situation's changing. Numbers are going up. So that is creating more anxiety in different people. So if you're one of those people who, I'm done with the mask, I'm totally comfortable, I'm going to live my life fine, but it's important that you think about other family members who may not be in that place right now going into the holidays. So how do we have these conversations? So one of the situations that was brought up to me was I'm invited to this party and, you know, I've been really careful with my kids. They're actually remote learning, and I'm not talking about myself because my kids are in school, but this is what this woman was talking about. And I'm concerned. I don't know, you know, are we going to share food? I don't know who's going to be there. So this is not your typical holiday situation where you might know people, but the conversation may sound very similar. So one, I think it's important to just be honest. I mean, get it out there, get the information out there. And hopefully we are not judging, they're not judging. And I think the more honest and upfront you are, because when we do that, we avoid passive aggressive behavior and conversations, which can only add to more tension. It only adds more tension in the conversation and the relationship. So say you go about a conversation, I just want to talk to you a little bit about your party. You know, we're still in that place where we're not completely comfortable and we love you and we trust you. It's just where we're at right now. We're trying to be careful because we do have family members who are elderly. We're planning to see them over the holidays. So we're just being extra cautious. And then ask your questions. You know, are you going to do things inside or outside? How many people? Are people wearing masks or not? I'm sorry that I have to ask all these questions, but you know, this is something that we've all been struggling with and trying to do the best we can to keep everyone safe. You know, I don't know who'd get mad if you approached a conversation that way. And of course, there are going to be people who get mad, but at that point, that's their problem. That's their own stuff getting in the way. You're kind, you're being clear, you are being vulnerable by putting everything out there. And honestly, at the end of the day, you're doing the best thing for you and your family. And if you go about it that way, you're less likely to have regrets. If you don't have the conversations, if you show up at an event and it is completely uncomfortable, you may have regrets walking away from that, saying, why didn't I ask about this? Now we're in this situation where we're inside, people aren't wearing masks, or whatever your level of comfort isn't. You don't want to be faced with that last minute and feel stuck in an awkward situation. So have the conversations beforehand, ask the questions. You know, I have said no to certain gatherings. I haven't had the conversations because really, it honestly wasn't worth it for me to go to that particular gathering or situation. And sometimes this had to do with kids, things that they were invited to, with people who we didn't really know very well. I just thought at the end of the day, I'm going to make the decision. They're not going. So that may also be in the realm of choices that you can make. But at the end of the day, you can make those choices. You can have those conversations. And it's important to let your level of comfort and also your risk level, who you're coming into contact with, who in your family might be in a more risky situation, to guide the direction of that conversation. I've had conversations lately with many clients asking, but how do I bring this up with family? Because we're used to doing things a certain way, and that's hard for people to let go of that at this time of year. And it really follows a pretty similar pattern. Think about what you're comfortable with. Think about what's important to you in terms of safety. Look at the numbers in your town and situations. And again, there's always that possibility for certain families to do the quarantine before or after, to get tested, to find out where everybody is coming into the situation and make your decision like that. But for many families, that isn't really an option. If you have people who are working, who are essential workers, who are working in offices, who have constant exposure, and then then you have to make your decisions accordingly. But I think, again, going into the conversation, being honest, saying, you know, mom or sister or cousin or whoever it is, you know, this year, unfortunately, we are going to do things a little bit differently because of these situations. You know, we're so sad about it. We really wish that we could be together, but we've really done everything we can to try and keep everybody safe. You know, we have these family members who are higher risk, and we're just worried about where this is going to go over the next few months. So this is what we've decided, and just wanted you to know, we're so sorry, we're going to miss you, but this is what we've decided. And again, that is in those cases where you decide not to go to the event. You can talk about, hey, what can we all do to do this in a way that's where everybody's comfortable and we keep everyone safe. Brainstorm with your family members. How can we do this? How do you think we can do this? How do I think we can do this? Let's talk about it and see if we can come up with something together. And maybe at the end of the day, that means we don't get together, or maybe it means we get together for a limited amount of time. What we've been talking about in my own family is that maybe we, because I am fortunate, blessed right now to have most of my family within a driving distance, within 20 minutes. So we usually all share food and get together in one house inside. But as I've said before, my parents are older and at high risk, and I worry about it, especially with the numbers going up in our area. So what one of my sisters and I talked about was maybe we each make food and we drop it off at each other's houses. So we have dinner in different places, but we are sharing food. And then we get together outside, you know, weather permitting. We have a fire pit, we have some patio heaters, and we do dessert together. So we're at a shorter time outside in the warmth, and hopefully Thanksgiving won't be so cold this year or rainy. And we're spending some time getting together, but not doing it traditionally the way we normally do it. And, you know, again, that's right for us. It may not be right for you. Your situation may be very different. But I think if we talk about these things, we talk about what's hard, we talk about what we feel like we're losing, because I think a lot of times people interpret those conversations a different way. You might hear, I don't want to get together, and interpret that as, okay, you don't care about me, or you don't love me. And that's not the case. That's why it's important to really be clear and be kind. This lends itself to a natural conversation about boundary setting. And part of what this is when we're having these conversations with family and friends is we're setting boundaries that are healthy for ourselves and our family. And actually, when you set those boundaries that are healthy for yourself and your family, they actually become healthy in the actual relationship. Oh my gosh, I'm laughing right now because it is 10:25 at night, Tuesday night, and I do my podcast recordings in my bedroom at my desk. And I don't know if you can hear it because my husband snores really loud, but he's like 5 feet away in the bed snoring. He can sleep through anything. I'm so jealous. And he snores really loud, so you might hear it. But what a good sport to let me stay up late and do this podcast. For tomorrow, you're going to hear it tomorrow. But anyway, I digress. So Brené Brown's research. Let's talk about Brené Brown, because I love what she says about boundaries. And in her research, she talks about how you have to set boundaries in order to remain compassionate. Basically, compassionate is not sustainable unless we set boundaries. And in her research, she found the most compassionate people that she came across, and this is qualitative research, were also the people who had the most clear boundaries, who did not have fear of setting boundaries, who set boundaries. And you know, in my mind, that goes back to the idea that love is clear. It's not ambiguous. Love is kind. Anything that we do or say, we do it in a kind, loving way. But let's not mistake that for something else. It does not mean that love is going to always tell you what you want to hear. And I just got an amen from all of you at home who are parenting teenagers. Love is not about giving you everything you want. It's not about telling you everything you want. I mean, this is even clear for many of us who are Christians in our faith journey. God doesn't always tell us what we want to hear, but he tells us things that are going to move us to a higher level of who we are and our purpose. So it's the same in our relationships. When we begin to set boundaries, people are going to push back because one, they lose control of a situation. Two, it becomes unfamiliar. And three, they begin to interpret it in different ways and it's uncomfortable. So that's why the clear piece of setting boundaries is really important. And what happens when we don't set boundaries, again, like I said, in those holiday situations, is we walk into situations that are uncomfortable for us, and then we become resentful. So a while ago, I listened to a talk that Brené did, and she talked about when I'm feeling resentful, I want to ask myself, where did I fail to set a boundary? I think she said it more eloquently than that. But I think about this now in my life. If I'm feeling resentful, where was the situation where I failed to set a boundary that I could have set that would have prevented me from getting resentful? So I don't automatically put it on the other person, attribute my resentment to them. I first think about where could I have set a boundary? And I'm serious. 95% of the time, it's very clear to me where I failed to set that boundary and now where I know that I need to set it going forward. She talks about the acronym BIG, B-I-G. When you're thinking about these relationships, B for boundaries. Where do I need to set a boundary where I can maintain my integrity, who I am, operate in the ways that are important to me? And G, remain generous, remain compassionate, remain giving in the relationship. And boundaries enable us to do all of that. So boundaries are a huge piece of staying compassionate, which is a huge piece of maintaining a loving, giving, generous relationship. So think about that when you're having these conversations. People may not like it at first, but if you address the underlying issue, which is, I don't like this because I don't feel cared for or loved or appreciated. If you can address that right off the bat, I love you and this is hard for me because I care about you. I really am sad that we can't do it this way, but let's think of other ways that we can connect and celebrate and enjoy this time, even if it means we do it apart. So that's just a little tip on the holidays. So my next question that I got was, how do I stay organized during this time? And this is a little bit of a longer conversation, but hopefully a helpful one. So why is it hard to stay organized during this time? So let's just talk about stress response in general. So we know when our sympathetic nervous system is stimulated, we're in that fight, flight, or freeze mode. Now, what's interesting about the freeze mode, I think many of us have heard it by now, because it's like, why are we shutting down? Why are we overwhelmed? Why are we not able to get anything done? And where that came from, and I can't even remember because we're like at 70 episodes on this podcast. I don't even remember if I've talked about this or not before. Someone just sent me an email and be like, Noro, you're totally repeating yourself all the time because that's where my brain is, very limited capacity because of the stress. The freeze comes from an evolutionary process. So when we're running from a bear in the woods, I love that analogy because that's actually where this all came from. We can either fight the bear, we can run from the bear, that's a flight, or our brain may assess in that moment, we're not fast enough to run and we are not strong enough to fight. So we're going to freeze, which actually is we're going to play dead. We're going to shut everything down and stop. And what's happened to us, because now the pandemic has been so long, the stressors have been coming. We're constantly having to make these decisions. Okay, do I engage in this or do I not? How do I reevaluate work? How do I pivot here? How do I deal with the kids at home? Constant stress. We are in a constant state of this fight, flight, or freeze mode. And it's quite a bit of stress hormone that is continually flooding our system. So we may find that we're in that freeze response more. We don't have the strength anymore to fight. We don't have the speed to run anymore. So we may be shutting down. And that has to do with the constant level of neurotransmitter being released with stress, as well as cortisol, which has long-term implications in our body. We won't talk about that now. You don't need to be more depressed than you're already feeling or anxious. We'll get to that when it becomes an issue. So what we need to do is find ways, one, to calm that response down, which I'm going to talk about in the next question about how do we not get depressed. But let's just talk about quick organizational things that can make a big difference. Lists. This is the number one thing that I do drives my husband crazy because I'm not an organized person. So yes, I make lists, but yes, I make 1,000 of them. I know where they are for the most part. I know what's on them, but no one likes to see 1,000 lists in the house and post-it notes, but they do work. And the reason that they work is because we can only hold about 4 things in our head at a time. This is research that has come out of McGill University in Montreal. There's a professor who is there who wrote, I can't remember his name right now, but he wrote the book Organized Mind. And he wrote that most people can only hold 4 things in their head at a time. But we often have like 8 to 10 to 12 things. But what happens is we waste neuroenergy trying to remember all of these things, juggle that list in our heads, and that leads to distraction because we're constantly changing our focus. What he says is if we write these things down, we use that energy that normally we expend trying to remember everything for more productive processes, and that enables us to be more focused. The research also says when we make a list and prioritize what's on that list, okay, these are most important things, they have to get done today, these can wait, we're 35 to 40% more likely to accomplish what is on that list than if we didn't write it down at all. So there is a lot of evidence that talks about making lists. And what that also does is it reduces the amount of stress that we have because we're not anxious about remembering it. Number 2 is we need to stop multitasking. I just heard a collective gasp from every woman listening to this podcast because like how do we navigate life if we're not multitasking? Well, there is a cognitive neuroscientist named Caroline Leaf, who I love. She's also a person of faith. And she wrote an article about this in Mind Body Green. And I just want to give you some excerpts from this article because I thought it was really excellent. And she talks about when we multitask, it creates this milkshake thinking. Basically, our brain cells and neurochemicals get shaken up. It is the opposite of mindfulness. And we know all the benefits of mindfulness, which I'll just run through in a minute, because every rapid, incomplete, poor quality thought shift, you know, going from one thing to another, like we're writing an email and something pops up on our screen, so we go and answer that text, or someone needs something, so we stop what we're doing, then we say, okay, let me get you this glass of water, 6-year-old, that you're perfectly capable of getting yourself, but I'm going to do it for you anyway. Just my own issue. What that does, it makes a milkshake of our brain cells, and it also creates anxiety and stress at the neurochemical level. So jumping from one task to another, what it basically does, it clouds our brain, it affects our ability to concentrate, it affects our ability to do whatever we're doing well, and that leads to anxiety and stress. So what she suggests is that we have to compartmentalize our actions. And I will say this, even though this is not gender specific, men are far more better at compartmentalizing. And I'll give you the best example I have of this. When you get into a fight with a male, they're still able to be intimate. Sex and fighting, they don't affect each other because they have this ability to compartmentalize that females just don't in that way. Some females definitely do, and we can in certain areas, but that's one area that most of us cannot. Just an example. So what can you do to overcome this issue of multitasking? One, you have to remind yourself that you can't do everything at once. So if you're in the middle of a task and something pops into your mind, write it on a list. I'm going to go back to this when I finish this one thing. You can use sticky notes as a reminder, whatever you need to stop. And yes, that is a shift of focus, but it's not as great a shift of focus as if you are stopping and changing your action, doing something else. Write it down, go back to it. What we're going for is single task focus. And that there's your parallel to mindfulness, being fully present in the tasks that you're doing at once and not jumping around from one thing to another. Number 2, finish that one task first. And part of that means saying no to people. I'm laughing because I'm just still hearing my husband snoring. It's really cute at this point, but it won't be in a little while when it gets really loud. So that means saying no to people when people are vying for your attention when you're doing things. And this goes back to boundaries. How do we set boundaries on things that we have to do? We need to set some boundaries and saying, okay, this is time for me to do this. I'm going to help out this other person or go to my kids, you know, provided it's not an emergency, no one's bleeding or broken bone or whatever it is. I'm going to go to them in a moment when I'm done. And I know for some people that creates anxiety, but we have to really try and focus on that single task action. Part of this is limiting online time as well. We all know the effects of social media. If you haven't watched A Social Dilemma, watch it on Netflix. It is powerful, and I need to do a podcast conversation about that Netflix special. But limiting your online time, setting boundaries around that, checking your screen time on your phone, shutting it down, putting it in another room, whatever you need to do, will limit stress and anxiety. It will help you organize your time better, because how many of us go to our phone for one thing and we get sucked into that rabbit hole and end up in all these other places? I know sometimes I go to look at a devotion and I end up buying a pair of shoes. I mean, totally unrelated, other than I'm thankful for the shoes, I guess. But, you know, we lose track of time. So what we want to practice is, when we do this kind of single task focus, it's deep thinking and it's mindfulness. And that's kind of the informal practice of mindfulness. But the formal practice of mindfulness is meditating on one thing, one thought, one scripture, whatever it might be, meditating on your breath, the counts of your breathing in a mindful state. What that does is it trains our brain to focus on one thing. It actually activates your prefrontal cortex. So if you know anyone with ADD, it's an issue with your prefrontal cortex, because that is our center for executive functioning, our ability to organize and get things done. So when we engage in mindfulness practices, what happens is that strengthens our prefrontal cortex activity. It stimulates it and actually makes us better at executing things, at organizing things, but also keeps us more mindful, which then has an impact on our anxiety, on our depression, on our state of satisfaction. We feel more fulfilled in what we're doing, and we feel calmer. So mindfulness is a whole other area that we need to talk about, but that's just kind of a little bit into it, how it's related to how we can stay organized. So hopefully that can help. And the other thing I'm going to say is check your expectations. Are we expecting to do far more than we have time for? Are we expecting to do more than what's actually realistic, given our life situation, our responsibilities, and our stress? Keep your expectations in check. Look at your list and ask yourself the first question: how much of this is realistic to get done in the time frame that I'm thinking that I need to get it done? And if that's the case, give yourself grace, give yourself self-kindness, self-compassion. I don't need to do all of this now. I know I want to. I know someone who is wrapping Christmas presents today, and we were going back and forth on Instagram today, and she's like, "Oh, I have to get it done. That's my type A." And I said, "I am like type C. I'm a December 23rd, 24th wrapper." And she said to me, "Oh my gosh, that would give me a panic attack." And I said, "Well, the reason I don't have a panic attack is because I'm way too tired to have one. So I guess it works out." So, you know, be kind to yourself, be compassionate, be realistic, give yourself grace when you're looking at that list. And you know what? You get done, you get done. That's practicing acceptance. We're going through all the big practices right now. All right, last question as we wrap up this podcast is, how do I not get depressed this season? This is a hard one because, again, we're going into the winter, looking at the fact that we may be now entering a more precarious time. You know, people are talking about the second wave. We're aware of what we're giving up. I think for me, I'm just going to share my own personal on this, is to tell myself, this is a season. This is temporary. Hopefully by next spring, we're going to be in a very different place. We can all do things for a season. And instead of focusing on what I can't do, I try and focus what I can do. How can I connect? Can I write notes to my family about gratitude, what I love them about, what I'm grateful for them for? I realize that my grammar is not all that correct right now. It's getting late. So bear with me. Give me some grace. I appreciate that. But I'm thinking about, what can I do in this season that I enjoy? What am I able to do rather than what I'm giving up? And it's not to say don't acknowledge what you're giving up. Acknowledge it. You have to grieve those losses. But actually just getting it out can help. Naming it can say, okay, this really sucks. I'm really upset about this. Naming it can make a difference rather than just kind of letting that angst build up and create tension, even at the neurobiological level, creating anxiety. So what I'd say is how not to get depressed. Let's anticipate it. Let's plan a little bit. We have to care for yourself. You have to care for yourself. So that's in some of the basic things. Sleep. Are you sleeping well? And if not, look into that. What can you do? I'm going to do a podcast on sleep again very soon, but there's one on this podcast with Dr. Katie Takayasu that's fantastic, all about sleep. Are you eating well? Are you exercising? Exercise is huge for preventing anxiety and depression before it starts. It's also helpful once you are experiencing those things, but incredibly huge to prevent you from getting there. And I've had patients who've never exercised in their life. When we found a routine that was manageable for them, not only did some come off medication, but they're now addicted to exercise in a good way and never thought they could be. But even walking, getting out and walking 15, 20 minutes, what can you do to make a plan for yourself to exercise, not just now, but when the weather changes? Caring for your spirit is really important. Meditation, prayer, that's also huge for me, as many of you know, just to know God has purposes in this time for me, for my family, and connecting to God to have him communicate to me what those are. And they come in many different ways, if we talked about on Soulful Sunday. But how do you care for your spirit? What does that mean for you? For some people, that is self-care. That's making time to light a candle and get cozy with a blanket and a cup of coffee and read a book. That is caring for your spirit for some of you out there. But what are those ways you can create those moments where you actually make it a priority to care for yourself? Those two things that I just suggested are huge for preventing depression. Track your negative thinking. That is huge. Are we in that mindset of this is going to be awful? I can't believe that I'm not going to be able to do this. It's the end of the world kind of thinking. We have to keep that thinking in check. I listened to one of my favorite people, Dr. Shiva Grofrani, who was on the podcast a few weeks ago. She's an OBGYN, but such a deep thinker. She put out this video today that says, you know, a little shift in word choice. So instead of saying, but this is so hard, let's move the but to the end. So instead of saying, but this is so hard, can we say, this is so hard, but here's what I can do. Here's how I can plan. I just loved that so much, that that little shift, because oftentimes preventing depression and preventing anxiety, they're a bunch of little shifts. They're the cumulative effect of little shifts, little actions that make a big impact. So this is so hard, but here's what I can do. Here is what I still have. Here is what I'm going to enjoy. We can turn that negative thinking around. And expectations, again, if we're expecting that everything's going to be the same, what are we expecting? Can we look at our expectations and say, given everything that's going on, given where I'm at right now, given where my family's at, given the excess of responsibilities that are put on us, or the way the situation might be changing, because we all know it could change, especially when it comes to school, are my expectations for myself and my family and my life realistic right now? That is really important to ask that question of yourself. Self-care, we talked about what self-care is, but think about what is meaningful to you in this time. What would make you feel calmer, relaxed, or even distracted? Sometimes distraction is a form of self-care. I know so many people where Netflix is their self-care. It is their distraction. It makes them laugh. And laughing is really important in terms of getting out some of those emotions. So create a self-care plan for yourself. You can Google ways to practice self-care and you'll get 1,000 different options. And I'm sure some of them will resonate with you. The last thing I want to talk about is this book that I got. And if you don't have time to read the book, there is a podcast episode that is called Burnout. And it's on Brené Brown's Unlocking Us podcast. Can you tell I like Brené? But it's about the book Burnout, The Secret to Unlocking the Stress Cycle. I highly, highly, highly recommend you listen to this episode if you can't read the book. And these two authors, who are just brilliant people, talk about the fact that when we experience a stressful emotion, there are ways to get that emotion out where you complete a whole cycle. And they talk about it in terms of looking at it as a tunnel. The emotion gets difficult because what we do is we go halfway through the tunnel and we get stuck there, but we need to get to the other end of it. And they give us different suggestions in how to get to the other end of the tunnel, where the light is, to get that emotion out. And there were a few of them that I thought were quite easy to do that I wanted to share with you. And they're things that we actually have talked about on this podcast, but I think could be very helpful to you. So number one, they do talk about exercise. Exercise in that moment that you're feeling stressful, anxious, depressed, to go out and exercise. And it doesn't have to be running a marathon. It could be jumping up and down in your room. It could be taking a quick walk, but exercise can make a big difference. Breathing in the way that I've talked about in this podcast, and if you've listened to any of them, breathing, when we talk about breathing, deep diaphragmatic breathing, where you feel your belly expand like a balloon when you're inhaling. And the key is to, the key to this kind of breathing is a longer exhale. Whatever your count inhale is, make it longer on the exhale, because that's what down regulates your sympathetic nervous system. So meaning that stimulates your parasympathetic nervous system, which sends your body into a relaxation mode. And you can actually train your body to do that. And you can do that anywhere you are. No one needs to know that you're doing it, but you're actually calming yourself down. So they even talk about that kind of breathing as a way to unlock your stressful emotions. A couple other things that I really loved. One was a hug that's 20 seconds or longer. And you know this, when you've been in a hug or even a handshake where like you're ready to let go, but the other person isn't, it's like that awkwardly long hug. That actually, and it makes sense at the neurochemical level, because we know hugging releases oxytocin. And that is that bonding hormone. It's a calming hormone. It's the hormone that promotes togetherness. And it's generally a happy neurochemical. So when you hug someone in a hold for 20 seconds, it's that awkwardly long hug, it releases these neurochemicals, and it can also release emotions that are stuck. So that's something that most of us can do, even if it's hugging a pet. You can do that. The other thing they talked about, and I'm just going from memory now, is interacting in a positive way with someone else. So even the barista at Starbucks, if you have a positive interaction, that can change the direction of your mood. And if you don't have an opportunity like that, you can think of a time where you had that, and it can have a similar effect. And lastly, one of the other things I talked about was that laughter. And it's like that awkward, you don't look cute kind of laughter, like really from deep inside you, almost like ugly laughter, but real, genuine laughter. That kind of thing can unlock your stress cycle as well. So hopefully that will give you a picture of what you can do so that we don't get depressed. We can keep our anxiety in check and have a better fall winter than what people are anticipating. Lastly, you know, I'm just going to add, look at how you can meet someone else's need. Someone else who is in need that you know. As I mentioned recently, I've had so many friends diagnosed with cancer. Reach out to people, ask how you can be helpful. And sometimes don't even ask. You know someone's going through a hard time. You know they have kids. Bring them dinner one night. Just find out what they're allergic to. You know, do things that not only will help them, but actually, as we've talked about on the last podcast, they will change your emotional state, not only at the spirit level, not at the emotional level, but at the neurochemical level psychologically. So there are so many things we can do. I'm just going to end this podcast by saying, let's think about what we can do, not what we are losing and giving up. Yes, it's important to go there, but let's reshift. Let's shift that focus, those tiny little shifts into what we can do, because there really is so much we can do even during this time of COVID and stress. I hope that is helpful to you. Definitely, please, if you haven't write me a review, write one, subscribe to the podcast, share it with your friends. We need, not for me, but we need this message to get out. We need people to know that they can get well, that they don't have to be stuck, that there is hope, especially going into this next season. I hope you have a great week. Be well, live full, and I'll look forward to being back with you very soon.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a second, go on the Apple Podcast app and rate this podcast. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like and what you want more of. And connect with me. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media at Nero Feliciano, the Incidental Therapist on Facebook, and Nero Feliciano on Instagram. And you can also connect with me through my website, Nero Feliciano. So until the next time, have a great day, be well, and live full.